Our next presentation will be given by Eric Bremner and Bremer, and is entitled Factors Influencing the Relationship of Ion Exchange Membrane and Extractable Nutrient Measurements.
Well, good morning. That was actually very a great presentation to hear, and mine follows very well right after that. I come from a slightly colder place up in Canada, and we've actually been using ion exchange resin membranes for quite a few years, both in doing research to find things out, as well as for using it for providing farmers recommendations for fertilizer. Now, my colleagues with this is Lindsay Andernach, who works with me, and Jeff Shano. He's from the University of Saskatchewan, and I went to grad school with him, and he started working with these ion exchange resin membranes in the early 1990s. Now, they look like this, or they're about this much in size, and they just consist of instead of a ball, we have a flat surface, and we've put them in a nice, handy-to-use plastic thing so we can bury them in soil under many different kind of conditions. So one is positive to attract the anions, and the other one is negative to attract the cations. And the way we work with them is essentially putting them into soils in situ, in field studies. As well, what we do is we get, for farmers, we actually get soil samples brought to our labs, and there we have our standardized method consists of bring that soil up to field capacity, put these in for 24 hours, and we basically say, well, if a soil can supply so many nutrients to that area in 24 hours, well then, this plant with, you know, we have various crops, many crops, you know, this crop has this kind of root area, it has this kind of demand, what does that response look like? That's how we work with as the standard method. But everybody always wants to know, well, what's the relationship with that and extractable? And so I'm going to a little bit touch on that this morning, and, you know, why there is relationships, and then why there isn't, and what you can learn with that. So essentially, when you put them in soil, what happens, of course, is that diffusion from soil solution and all that, just like was explained in the first thing. And so basically you can see that it's a concentration gradient. So that's where your extractable is, that measuring the concentration in the soil solution and a bit more. And the diffusivity, so how well the ions can move through soil. So that's what happens initially when you put them in, and then over time, it's basically, we're talking about ion exchange dynamics. There's an equilibrium between what's on the colloid, what's in soil solution. So that's what happens when you put them in time. What I'm going to just show you is that if you do something like a 3-hour saturated paste, you've got consistent high diffusivity, and you compare nitrate that you gain on here versus an extractable, well, you know, no surprise, there's a very strong and close relationship between them. We look at sulfur, another mobile nutrient, very similar. If we look at calcium, still a good relationship between them, again with a 3-hour saturated paste, but perhaps not quite as good. And I'm going to show you this next one, it's potassium. You can kind of have a better understanding of why this happens. So on the left is simply looking at it versus extractable with the ammonium acetate method. On the right, what I've done there is looked at the potassium adsorption ratio, because the affinity for different ions on a membrane is affected. Potassium isn't held as strongly as calcium and magnesium, and if you correct for that, you can actually get that. You can actually get them to relate quite well with this 3-hour saturated paste method, which again isn't our standard method, but I'm just kind of showing you, you know, yes, they are related. Another one with zinc. You know, I'm not going to belabor this, but you know, everything is, the mobile nutrients are really, really closely related. The other ones are not, you know, you got to get the activity and the affinity stuff kind of worked out, but that's the way it works. But, you know, like I said at the beginning, there's dynamics that are going on. And so we had some little things just to look at that. We had these, you know, very simple tubs full of probes, and we had different moistures. And I'm just showing you, well, what about saturation? I showed you, you know, the saturated paste. Well, and we buried them for you know, everywhere from 3 hours up to seven days, over a one-week period. And so you can see that, you know, what you get at 3 hours is already quite a difference, but over time you can kind of see, well, that low one, it stayed low, the other ones went up, and sometimes you see some different patterns going on. If you look at calcium, for example, it might look like this. And basically over 1 day, which is, you know, our standard, is usually you get a really good signal of what's happening with the different nutrients. But just for fun, we also did a study where, well, we took some probes out of that. We had basically a permanent wilting point dry, and we had a field capacity, and we had a saturated, and we left them in there for a week, and then we took them out and we put them in the other one just to kind of, well, what's happening, right? And of course, when you put them in a dry soil, nothing much is happening. There's not, no, you know, there's no diffusion. There's low diffusivity. But if you then take it out, it's going to quickly turn and look like, you know, the other ones. Whereas if it's, but if you've got the one that's already gained all the insaturated or field capacity, and it has all the ions already on it, just because you put it in a dry soil, that doesn't mean it's going to lose it all, unless, you know, because calcium is held quite strongly on colloids. However, we do the same thing with something like manganese. Again, under saturated conditions, redox is going down. You get actually lots of the conversion of the manganese from 4 to 2 to a more mobile form, and we can truly see that developing over time. So it really goes up. But now, because manganese isn't held as strongly as some of the other ions when we did the flip around, now we're going to actually lose it. It gets displaced. So some of those sort of dynamics related to ion exchange we can still see happening in these soils. This is actually a little project that was done at Washington State University, and I'm just kind of showing you some of the cool stuff that kind of come out with it. And they basically just put them in moist soil or in saturated soil, and they have a bunch of different amendments. And basically in just moist soil, as typical, there's not much manganese around. But if you put it in a saturated soil, if you put it with no amendment, it actually stayed really low, and that's because it's not, just because it's saturated doesn't mean it's anaerobic. You got to have a carbon supply and saturated, then all of a sudden, I mean, I tell you, these numbers are just huge. And we totally reflected in what we see in nitrate. So in nitrate with none and saturated, we still see a lot of even more nitrate because there's no denitrification going on. But whereas these guys are immobilizing the nitrate, this treatment, the manure, it's releasing the nitrogen. But if you saturate it, you've got all that denitrification, it's low redox, and we lost all that nitrate. So we can kind of see some stuff that looks like that. It's kind of cool. Here's an experiment I was doing with Jim Miller at Canada in Lethbridge, and we just basically were looking in, again, in saturated wet soils over time with amendments. And we can kind of, again, just see how iron, again, one that becomes more mobile under anaerobic conditions, increases over time. And that, in turn, was also reflected with what was happening in the ponded water above that. But the relationship like of that, those things are, is usually like something like that, but not always like that, because you got to understand one is ion exchange and one is mobility in above it. The other thing I really wanted to quickly just sort of touch on, you know, when we go around and in this graph, what I did is I went to a long-term zero-till field, and what I have on the axis down here, I sampled 0 to 1 inch. That's all, 1 to 2 inch, 2 to 4 inch, 4 to 6, 6 to 8 inch, and it had been a dry area, dry period of time, and I put these probes in them dry, and yeah, nothing happens in dry soil. Perfect. That's what we expect. But if you wet them up, and the interesting thing is that when you wet up most of these nutrients, the activity, that supply rate, is really high just in that surface, 1 inch, 2 inch, and it's an order of magnitude or more less in, you know, with lower depths, except for the ions that have a lot of buffering at depth, like calcium. It's just straight across. There's lots available at depth as well as at the surface, but any of the important ones like N, P, K, and all the micronutrients, it's an order or two of magnitude in the higher in the surface and then in the bottom. And so a lot of these things, when we're going around and we're comparing one to the other, we can actually look at, you know, where and when, and, you know, nutrients can get supplied to crops. So, in conclusions, I just want to make is that these pre-RS nutrient supply rates, especially with a three-hour saturated pace, yes, they are very closely related to extractable nutrients, and the relationship just depends on, of course, ion activity, concentration related to and ion affinity, and then, of course, actually it depends on the extraction method, like was mentioned before, because there's all kinds of them depending on this and depending on that. So there's a relationship, it depends. But the other thing that we have to understand is that these ion exchange membranes are dynamic. They change with time. They're responsive to diffusivity, and so a consistent measurement moisture has to be used if you're, for example, wanting to use it in fertilizer recommendations. There's ion interactions due to some of the ion exchange. The longer you leave them in, the more processes like mineralization, uptake, and denitrification can influence. So again, you learn stuff like that. Soil redox potential has large effects. And these are very useful for, like you say, looking at, you know, when and where nutrients supply rates are occurring in soil. Thank you. And I have some time for questions, I believe.
All right. We have we have about 3 or 4 minutes for questions.
What, Jenny, you said the points all over the field of each probe. So how many probes do you need in order to give a farmer advice on a field?
To give a farmer advice on a field, we go to his field and we collect a soil sample in a very similar way that you would in any other sample.
Yeah.
No, well, that's more the research end of things. So, you know, that's very useful for monitoring. You think that's going to happen. Is that really happening? And you learn about what really influences. But you're absolutely right. You've got to get enough, you know, if I had enough of these, I think it would be a lot. It would be a lot. But we get the normal, and so it's important to get the representative soil sample, and then it's also very important to have a consistent moisture and stuff. And that's what we can do in the lab, and that way we get our consistent measure. Good question.
Additional questions?
Are there any implications for this methodology for addressing concerns of people that support the hanging extractant for environmental assessment?
So the Haney is basically, that's a soil respiration mostly, or?
No, it's water.
It's a water.
Extraction.
Pardon?
Oh. Extraction.
Okay. Again, I would say, in a sense, what we'll see with these would probably be probably quite closely related to these water. A water extraction over a short period of time, that would kind of, you know, be something I guess you could learn with them.
Can I make a comment there?
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused.
I don't know why. I don't think so, because the resin works as a sink.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if you just have water, it's a different process.
Yeah, now what, yeah.
The Haney test also incorporates the H3A humic acid, or, you know, they have their own extract, so it's supposed to be kind of stimulating the plant root, but yeah, it's very different from what we use, the citric oxalic acid.
Okay.
Incorporated in there, part of their toolkit too, so.
Yeah, I haven't really worked with that one. It'd be interesting to have a look at maybe, and, you know, the relationships there, but on the other hand, you know, we're making this work. Putting out good recommendations, so it'd be interesting perhaps to have a look. But
take one more question, if there.
I think generally these resins have the advantage that they incorporate some degree or some element of kinetics.
Mm-hmm.
The kinetic component, which is absent in all extraction. So clearly, this is going to simulate what the root does more closely than any extraction that man will ever invent. So I don't know why we keep on inventing new snake oil potions. I don't understand.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's give our speaker a